This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. My guest this morning is Terry Butler, Executive Director of Sustainable Seattle. Terry Butler is here today to tell us about the work of Sustainable Seattle, including the Sustainability Leadership Awards and the Pacific Northwest Resilience Challenge. Welcome, Terry.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
It's great to have you. Would you like to begin by telling us about the mission and history of Sustainable Seattle?
Sure. Sustainable Seattle has a really interesting history. We were formed in the early 90s. Some Seattleites came together. Initially, about 20 of them were the founders, and they were concerned about the fact that society was using more resources than were being replenished, and that there were social justice issues around that. So it wasn't just about the environment, but it was about looking at communities in a holistic way. So that group came together and brought in more than 100 volunteers to help develop the first set of community-based indicators. And those indicators caught on worldwide. The first set sold about 2,500 copies worldwide, and then a revised set published in the mid-90s sold 4,500 copies. So the organization is still quite well known for developing the first set of triple bottom line community-based indicators. And since then, we've been working in neighborhoods and communities, and our job is really to catalyze the next stage of moving toward a truly sustainable society. So that's what we're doing today with our programs.
Before we go into detail, would you give us an overview of Sustainable Seattle's key projects?
Our key projects right now are, number one, the awards, which we put on a Sustainability Leadership Awards program every year, and it takes about 6 months. We take nominations from the community at the end of the summer and the early fall, and then those are vetted and passed on to community judges, experts from the community, and then those are put forward in a celebration, which we have coming up on January 23rd this year, and it will be held at Mohai, and we celebrate the top three in each category, and then we pick a winner out of those top three, and those winners were able to tell those stories during the year in our ongoing communications and call attention to the diversity of things going on in the community toward making a better society, better businesses, and a holistic way of looking at the community. So that's one program. And then the other program that we just launched this last fall on October 2nd at University of Washington was the Pacific Northwest Resilience Challenge. It came out of an initial program that we did 2 years ago. Actually, we did a panel event around climate impacts, and it was really interesting, and the panelists were very fired up about the topic and getting to meet each other, and so that led to the next year having a business-focused climate conference, and we held that at University of Washington in 2013. So our plan was to follow up on that, but in the process of preparing for that, the topic moved more toward resilience, because by that time, the impacts of Sandy on the East Coast were prominently in the news. The topic of other communities needing to prepare because the costs of the coming climate impacts challenges were something that were at the forefront. So the topic shifted a little bit toward resiliency, and that launched with 150 of our local leaders and others interested in the topic on October 2nd. And we have some ongoing work now and impact groups happening, with the first task of all of the groups being to do an overall stakeholder map of who is working in the space, who should be interested in the space, so that our community can bounce back quicker from challenges and impacts that come our way. And under that umbrella, we have some on-the-ground work that's focused mainly in South Seattle. King County and King Conservation District are our primary funders down there for preparing those communities for climate impacts, rising seas, more storms, dealing with the stormwater issues and the pollution that's in that space to improve those communities. So those are our primary programs. We also do some business-related programs, encouraging businesses to do sustainability reporting, and that's going well by connecting corporate social responsibility people so that they can share what's working in their companies.
Now let's focus on the Leadership Awards. Would you elaborate on the purpose behind Sustainable Seattle's Leadership Awards?
The main purpose is to call attention to the diverse range of things that are happening. And so many of these things, if you read the descriptions, people, whether they're in a job or whether they're just doing this on their own, it's out of their normal bucket of responsibilities. They're just passionate about it. They're very interested in making the world a better place. They see something that needs to get done and they just charge forward and bring people together and do it. And so it's an opportunity to call attention to their success and an opportunity to put forward positive examples so that others can see how to move forward themselves.
Would you say a few words about the different categories for the awards?
We have 6 different categories, and then we have a Sustainability Hero Award. And these categories this year are the same as last year, but the categories the year before that were a little bit different. And every year we revisit what the categories are. The purpose is really to be at the leading edge of driving change in a direction that our experts feel that it needs to be driven. So after this year, we will revisit the categories. But this year we have a creative solution. So we thought calling attention to organizations and businesses that use out-of-the-box thinking to attack sustainability problems was important. Significant newcomer. One of the hardest things to do is to step into sustainability for the first time, to start thinking in that mindset and to take steps toward making your organization better. Transforming spaces. So that looks at things like buildings and landscape, making improvements in those. Resource impact, lessening our resource use and handling waste and being more efficient with energy and water. And transportation changer, so that's a big issue locally with our roadways packed at certain times. And there are really innovative solutions to improving transportation. And then setting an example. And this was a really big category this year. We had 14 out of our 40-some submissions for the 6 different categories in setting an example. And so that's a very inspiring category to take a special look at.
As you mentioned, the 2015 awardees will be announced on January 23rd at your awards dinner. Let's go through the categories, and perhaps you could give a brief description of the finalists in each of the categories.
Okay.
Why don't we start with significant newcomer?
The significant newcomer top 3 were Community Source Capital, and they were formed out of a Bainbridge Graduate Institute group and addressing the problem of finding financing for creative and new solutions. Banks look at certain criteria, and some of these projects didn't meet those criteria. And so Community Source Capital is like a big crowdfunding platform for community members to buy into these good ideas, and it's really taken off. It filled a need, and I think it will be a model for other organizations to follow. Floral Soil Solutions, this is really exciting. In the floral industry, when you order flowers for someone and weddings, etc., these arrangements are made by putting flowers stems into a foam form in the bottom of a bowl. And at the end of that floral arrangement's life, it's tossed. And the flowers are compostable, but the foam is a petroleum-based product and just goes to the landfill, one-time use. So this idea came up with Mickey Blake, who's a very creative inventor and has worked in other spaces, through a friend of hers whose family had been in the floral business for some time. And she got to thinking about it and thought there was no reason why a product like that couldn't be made out of biological-based materials and be recyclable or be compostable. So she came up with a solution, and it's won an EPA award and gotten quite a lot of attention. So that's a very exciting one that the floral industry is really happy to embrace. And Tiny Trees Preschool is brand new. They launched just this year and won attention at a Social Venture Partners Fast Pitch. And they're off and running their preschool for children to spend time outside. So basically getting rid of the facilities costs and having a preschool take place in local parks, etc. So several families have already signed up for that.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Terry Butler, Executive Director of Sustainable Seattle. Our topic is the work of Sustainable Seattle, including the Sustainability Leadership Awards and the Pacific Northwest Resilience Challenge. And you are tuned to the Sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on listener-powered KEXP 90.3 FM, and on the web at kexp.org. So who are the finalists for the Creative Solution category?
The Creative Solution category, this year there was a series of projects that Forterra and the City of Tukwila did. And those addressed both community, diverse community issues and food issues and bringing those groups together. So that one will be highlighted at the Sustainability Leadership Awards. The second one is Eco Balanza. It's a woman who's been making ecologically sound furniture, fairly handmade, made to order, but she's moving to a larger scale soon, and she's based in West Seattle, and so it's ecologically sound materials and completely natural furniture. I heard that she's getting quite a few calls because of the attention with the awards. And Reuse Consulting. Reuse Consulting is a really amazing business that started here and now serves several cities. But the idea is that demolition projects, there are a lot of wood waste, there's a lot of fixtures that can be reused, and all of these things were just heading to the landfill. So Dave started finding better homes for these things. And he started locally, and now he has consulted in more than 40 cities across the nation. When demolition projects happen, his group is often called in to handle the demolition refuse, and he is really a sustainability hero in addition to being nominated for the Creative Solution category.
Who are the finalists in the Setting an Example category?
Setting an Example, the finalists there are PCC Natural Markets, the Seattle Mariners, and Second Use Building Materials. All of those are amazing organizations. Second Use Building Materials, they actually have a store that people can go to that has building materials that have come from buildings that have been torn down, and people can look there for goods and lighting fixtures and building materials for their projects. Seattle Mariners, there are so many people going through those games every week, and Seattle Mariners has been working on their resource use and energy efficiency since about 2006. So they have set a great example for how to handle large crowds and a lot of resources by working on their waste streams and working on energy programs, and they've really been leaders in the nation in that category. And then PCC Natural Markets, they have fantastic programs for diverting their excess food supply to needy families and looking at their whole supply chain very holistically and to a benefit of the community in general.
Who are the finalists for the Transforming Spaces category?
Transforming Spaces, the judges felt very strongly about highlighting the projects that are going on in South Seattle. And those three projects this year are Highland Park Improvement Club. The community came together and with King County funding moved first with a rain garden. They pulled up some of their pavement and put in a rain garden to handle some of the roof runoff. And then they added a cistern to that to be able to handle more of the runoff. And then the site still had quite a lot of pavement, and a lot of the stormwater was coming from the street, running through this parking lot at the Improvement Club and straight on into the Sound. So it looked like a good site for the first Seattle depave project. So the community came together, and we have pictures of it, people in wheelbarrows pulling up the asphalt from part of this site. And then we brought in a contractor to put down permeable pavers. And now the site, it's 100% infiltration, so none of that pollution heads off into the Sound. And it made a huge difference in the appearance of the community center, bringing the community together. They want to have a coffee shop and a lot more outdoor activities because of it. And then complementary to that, the Duwamish River Coalition has been going for several years, and the whole issue of the Duwamish River being a polluted Superfund site is something that the county, the city, and now the EPA is stepping up to fund the cleanup of that site. It's such a resource in South Seattle. It's our industrial corridor, and there are wonderful, diverse communities down there. So the work that's been happening there is going to be highlighted. And then the Nature Consortium is also doing wonderful work down in that same area, focused on using arts and integrating artistic people into bringing attention to the environmental issues. So they're working on forestry, urban forestry in South Seattle, and bringing arts programs to call attention to the issues down there.
Who are the finalists for the resource impact category?
In resource impact, we have Pike Place Market and the Seattle Tilth Produce Program. And this was a fantastic program, again, bringing together excess produce or produce from farms and putting it together in packets and distributing it to community centers and preschools so that families could take fresh produce, and especially addressing issues in the so-called healthy food desert areas of the community where there may just be fast food available. Now fresh produce became available and the program has taken off like wildfire. There's a lot of growth potential there, providing good fresh produce to other communities. And the second one is Seattle Recreative, and they basically use waste materials to do creative projects with. So it calls attention to reusing waste materials, and it brings people together to exercise their creativity. And then the last one in that category in the top three is Travelers Against Plastic. And it was two groups here in the travel industry, and their focus is eco-travel. And so they became appalled, really, about water bottles and just the use of disposables in the travel industry. And so they started Travelers Against Plastic, and it's had a big impact on people's choices on how they travel and the goods that they purchase when they travel.
Who are the finalists for the Transportation Changer category?
That one's really interesting. And we think about our highways and our traffic, but the ones that came forward as transportation changers were FreeWheel Carbon-Free Cargo. So that is a bicycle cargo business and just started last year and it has taken off. So Cafe Vita uses FreeWheel to deliver their coffee store to store. What FreeWheel does is they have truck deliveries come to a warehouse site, and then from that site, the last mile delivery is done by bicycle. So you'll see these bicycles riding around town and delivering cargo to various businesses. Mobile Bicycle Rescue, all these commuters, I just saw a lot of commuters outside coming in this morning on their bicycles, and if they're on their way in and their bicycle breaks down, they can call Mobile Bicycle Rescue. Mobile Bicycle Rescue will come right then, fix their bike, and get them back on the road. So it's a way to make bicycle commuting a lot more practical. And then Pronto. Pronto just launched this last year, and now we see these bicycles available for people to take a Pronto bicycle from location to location and encouraging bicycle riding rather than automobile commuting within the city.
Would you now say a few more words about the Sustainability Hero Award?
The Hero Award is meant to call attention to those outstanding individuals, whether they're working in their job or whether they're working in their community, but they're really committed to bringing sustainability tasks and sustainability actions forward. So we've had a number of people called out for this. This year we had 13 different nominees, and I don't know, it would be hard for me to be a judge. I'm so impressed with what each of them are doing.
Would you also speak about your People's Choice category and the results?
That was a fun thing that we added this year. We wanted to get people engaged in letting their communities know that they'd been nominated. I mean, we have to pick three in the top three in each category, and it can be difficult because all of the nominees, if you look at the list, they're just doing amazing things. So we wanted to give them an opportunity to engage their community and get votes in, and it was really fun. We had more than 700 respondents to that survey that we sent out, and the Pike Place PDA and Seattle Tilth Project came out on top in terms of votes, but it was amazing how individuals and other groups got so many votes out. So we'll continue to do that and try to get more engagement in the voting and the program overall.
You are tuned to the Sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Terry Butler, Executive Director of Sustainable Seattle. Our topic is the work of Sustainable Seattle, including the Sustainability Leadership Awards and the Pacific Northwest Resilience Challenge. Let's talk now about the Resilience Challenge. Why focus on resilience? You mentioned a bit about that before, but would you say more?
We became interested because of our climate-related work. We see climate impacts coming, rising seas, the tides are getting higher, we're having more storms, which means power outages and more challenges with water. But it turns out the resiliency is broader than that. I mean, we live in a beautiful landscape here. It's mountainous, and that comes with risks. So we have earthquake risk, we have volcano risk, we have mudslide risk, and all these risks came to bear on the topic. And things that have happened in other communities in very recent history, as in the hurricane in New Orleans and hurricane on the East Coast, and now we had a mudslide, all brought this more to the forefront, that these types of challenges are going to continue. And as a community, we need to look at our abilities to be better prepared. Our job is really to make the job of disaster preparedness easier, so that if we think ahead and we prepare as best we can, that recovering after disasters is much easier than it would be otherwise.
What are the specific goals of your resilience project?
The first goal is, like I mentioned earlier, the groups are coming together and mapping various stakeholders. So it will be a huge win if we get people out of their silos and start communicating across expertise areas and across different community groups, government groups, and get business involved in solving some of these problems. So that's the first task at hand, is to get people out of their silos and hearing what each other are doing and hear their views. And then the second, close behind that agenda, will be to move it up on the political agenda radar. And part of that will entail looking at how we can fund becoming more resilient. Fortunately, there are methods that people are already bringing forward. The World Bank put out billions of dollars in green bonds in the last few years, and so those kinds of funding mechanisms are coming forward, and we want to help bring experts together so that in this community we can come up with funding to be better prepared ahead of time.
What has been accomplished so far?
So far, people's ears have been opened, I would say. We just launched on October 2nd, and then we have some groups that are meeting right now and realizing that they need to know more about frameworks that other communities have used, about who's doing what, who our local experts are, et cetera. So the goal for this first year is really to get a map of our own landscape, of people landscape and community group and social landscape on what's going on. And then we plan on moving forward based on what comes out of those learnings this year.
What is the timeline for the Resilience Project?
It's 3 years. So the first year we plan on looking at this landscape and getting good stakeholder maps, coming up with what metrics ought to be measured. The second year, we will be looking at those metrics and figuring out how best to move forward on those. And then the third year, we'll really be pushing forward and making those actions happen. Now, that's not to say that actions can't happen this year. Some of them might be easier steps, and we'll hopefully get going right away. And it's also not to say that nobody is thinking about this. People are thinking about this. So what we're doing is helping catalyze more movement and helping make it happen quicker, I would say.
Earlier, you alluded to a DPAVE project in South Seattle. Would you say more about your DPAVE projects?
That's a program that started in Portland, and so we like the idea. In South Seattle, if you fly in from the south and you look down, you don't see the typical Northwest evergreen state that you think of. It's just pavement everywhere. And that's a problem with water runoff. It's a problem with heat island effect, actually, when it gets hot in the summer. And so where are we going to put more greenery down there? There's all this pavement, so we need to take up some of the pavement. plant trees, put in rain gardens, and that improves air quality, improves water quality, and improves the sense of community. There are all these factors that are correlated with making an area more green. So DPAVE is a project that brings contractors and community members together to pull up pavement and put in green plantings, green infrastructure, and plant trees and make nice areas for gathering spots.
How receptive overall have you found people are to the depaving idea?
The community groups love it, and there's a lot of asphalt and pavement down there that really isn't very attractive. Maybe it's been there for a number of years and roots have made it crooked, and it just as well come up. So community groups and the city love it. Businesses look at us like we're a little bit crazy. So I think we have work to do there to help them see the side benefits of maybe having a lunchtime picnic area for their employees, etc., or getting them engaged in the community in general and seeing that they can contribute to that by making the community more green.
What are the plans of Sustainable Seattle for the future? Where do you plan to focus your efforts?
Well, I think these efforts, continuing to call attention to leading edge things in sustainability, will certainly be something that will be ongoing year after year. And the resilience challenge, I think that also will keep us busy year after year. I think it's an important role for Sustainable Seattle to play to convene groups and convene meetings locally, and where possible to share what we're learning and what we're doing with other cities in the nation so that we can move sustainability forward in other communities that maybe aren't as receptive as our community is.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
That things can be done. I mean, there are things that we can do as consumers. There are things we can do in our yards. There are things we can do in our transportation choices and what we do at work. And the steps are not that hard. So pick one thing this year. Do one thing differently so that you live a more sustainable lifestyle.
Well, thanks so much for being here, Terry.
You bet. Thank you for calling attention to the programs.
You are just listening to Terry Butler, Executive Director of Sustainable Seattle. For more information, check on the web at sustainableseattle.org. Again, that's sustainableseattle.org. The sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters program you have just heard will be on the streaming archive section of KEXP's website at kexp.org for the next 14 days. In addition, sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts, along with KEXP's music podcasts. Go to kexp.org, click on demand, and then podcasting. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on listener-powered 90.3 FM and kexp.org.